What do you do, Gail?
Well, and you're going to wonder why in the world I'm doing this, but I'm actually in our government relations department, and I work both as a lobbyist at the Capitol, and then I work on elections this time of year for House and Senate candidates here in Missouri.
Okay.
I don't know really how that ties into the podcast, but...
tell them what your undergraduate degree is.
My undergraduate degree was broadcasting and film. But then I got away from that and...
And I just pulled you back in.
Yeah, Todd pulls me back every once in a while. It's fun, though. I like it.
Well, tell us about the Pulse and how it came into being way back in January, I guess.
Well, that's hard to believe. It's been that long. Mm-hmm. Actually, just started talking about it. Todd listens to a lot of podcasts and does that kind of thing. And we were talking about it's a good way to... really reach our members and be able to talk about one issue or a couple of issues for longer than you may get on the website or any other method through our normal print publications. So we thought it was just another avenue to get to talk to them, and we started kicking around ideas to see if we really had enough stuff to talk about over a prolonged period of time to make it interesting, and hopefully we have done that. But I think that's really kind of how I got it started.
Yeah. When I first started to do this, I did it without Gail, and that's for the biggest reason was that she was at the Capitol, and there was just no way that she was going to be able to help me. That sort of thing's probably going to happen when we get back into the next legislative cycle. But then what we started to realize was there were topics that we were covering on the podcast in 10 minutes that we could spend hours trying to write about in our in our either our newsletter that goes out every Friday or in our magazine, and we just couldn't cover that same depth of information that we could in 10, 15 minutes on a show like this.
I've never really understood why that is, but sometimes it's just so much easier to explain something than it is to write about it. So it really does help.
What sort of reaction have you had from your various target audiences since you started?
At first, I think that some of our members are still waking up to the fact that we're even doing something like this. We've started to get emails from members, and that's who we're targeting more than anything else, are teachers and specifically MSTA members. And we started to get feedback from our members who are appreciative of some of the topics we've chosen. We talked about, for instance, one of Gail's ideas was we headed to
the Public School Retirement System.
Public School. I keep saying Public Relations Association, PRSA. We went to PSRA. And while we were there, we talked to them about the system, what it meant to individuals who were getting ready to retire at that point in time. And we got some good feedback on that show. And then we started to get feedback from teachers, members of ours who use technology in the classroom. And we did a show with one of our members about 3 weeks ago, I guess it was, which was really a pretty successful show because we got a lot of feedback from that one. Teachers interested in some of the things that Eric, who is our member, was talking about. And then the funny thing is, every once in a while, we know, there's competition for teaching associations in Missouri, and we know that our competition listens to us because they've called us to ask us questions about some of the things that we've talked about on the show.
Well, this is a good place for me to ask you about a couple of specific shows. As I looked back through the 25 shows that you've got on your website, let me just mention a couple of topics, and then I'll ask you about them specifically. And Pulse 24, you talked about recent news articles about Missouri's failing grade from the U.S. Department of Education. Then back on number 17, you had somebody from a legal services manager who talked about a lawsuit that was filed on behalf of teachers. I mean, you guys have talked about some topics that I would have thought might have been a little, that somebody might have had a problem with you discussing. Has that been the case?
The most recent one, we can talk about that one first because Gail and I went back and forth, and you may not be able to tell it as much during the show as was actually the case, but we debated that issue long before we actually went on the air to debate the issue. And, our executive director was the one who was most frustrated with the failing grade issue and the fact that we felt that the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education was kind of putting us into an awkward position with our members. He wanted us to mention that a lot sooner than we did. And then when we heard a radio spot on Missouri Net the next day, we realized that, wow, that's exactly what they did. They decided to sandbag the issue, which frustrated us even more. So we had no problem going on the air and talking about it. And then some of those other issues, like the lawsuit that you're talking about, it's for us, we feel like it's important for us to get our message out there. And this is one of the best ways that we could possibly be proactive with something like that. And we've heard feedback time and again from people that have listened to what we say and asked for more of a response based on that issue. And we can spend more time talking about that in 10 to 15 minutes than the soundbite that we're going to get if we're interviewed by somebody on air.
Well, and I think one of the issues, especially with the lawsuit, is that, you know, when something like that is covered by regular media, their audience is so broad, and our members are going to have a lot more specific and different questions that aren't going to be answered by your average newspaper story or, whatever media. So it's a good ability for us to be able to talk to them and answer some of their specific questions. So I think it's been certainly no one in the association has had any issues, and I haven't heard of anybody from like the department or anywhere else calling up and saying anything. So it's actually gone very well.
Well, I have to commend you guys. I mean, David and I talk about this very issue all the time. I mean, bloggers and podcasters are familiar with this notion of doing what you're doing, which is becoming part of that conversation, controlling it, well, to the extent that it can be controlled, but at least engaging in it. And I think it's rather enlightened for, no disrespect to any state association, to be so open to doing what you guys are doing. It sounds like it's been warmly received.
Well, I think that we could fall into the trap of basically placating to an audience or sugarcoating an issue, but I don't think that MSTA has ever been the kind of association that has been charged with that kind of allegation. I mean, we always try to be completely honest with our members, and sometimes to the point where they get frustrated with us. But we want them to be, we want to be upfront. We want to be transparent as an association. We want to make sure that we're giving them information that's going to benefit them, not information that's going to ultimately benefit us as employees of MSTA.
David, jump in at any
time. It's nice to be in a position like that. You know, I mean, that just, it doesn't always happen that you get to be in that kind of position, especially in public relations.
Gail, from your
perspective. Like you said, I think one of the things that's probably helpful in that regard is that there's this expectation that you guys are going to be this way. So you're not coming in as, you know, a lot of big corporations have these SEC rules hanging over them, and they can't talk that openly anyway, and nobody's used to them talking openly. And so it sounds to me like at least you don't have that baggage starting out.
Yeah, when you're an independent association, there you can move a lot quicker than you can if you have a national affiliate that you have to answer to, or if you have shareholders that you have to answer to. We answer to our members and we answer to our board. And if they told us they wanted us to stop this show, you know, that would be something different. But those that know that we're doing it, and we that's not to say that not all of them have the opportunity to know that, but you know as well as I do that with new technology, some of them probably haven't tuned in yet. But we try to make it as available and as easily accessible as possible. So hopefully within the next year, when we, you know, our year anniversary will be January, hopefully at that time, then they will have all heard it and still approve of it.
Would you hope and expect, that, Gail, that there will be legislators listening come January?
I certainly hope so. I know we actually, it's really interesting, when we're down at the Capitol, we have a weekly newsletter or bulletin that our department does on legislative issues. And it's always interesting to watch them on the floor reading their mail and reading our bulletin. And I would certainly hope that one of the sources they would go to would be this podcast, and that we can address some of those issues when we get around to that time of the year, that, you know, whatever's topical. And it will be a nice forum to be able to talk to our members about some issues that are in the legislature in a little more depth than you can do in a two-page newsletter or a four-page newsletter.
And one thing that we want to do.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was going to say one thing that we want to try to do as we move into I guess it would be towards the end of September, 1st of October. Mm-hmm. Gail and I want to try to talk to some of the candidates that we end up endorsing on our show. I mean, this seems like a good format, a good forum for them to be able to explain their point of view, especially to people who might not otherwise see it other than in a radio spot or see it in the newspaper. So,
what we strive to do is to not do so much propaganda, really, in our publication, but to speak factually about issues. All of our positions that the association has are based on a resolutions process that's run by our membership. So, you know, we never get into the problem of whether it's my opinion or some other staff person's opinion. It's always the opinion of the majority of our delegates. So that's really how we try and do all of our stuff that we send to that the legislature may read. But in the end, you know, it's always going to be what their opinion is, and they can read it and determine whether or not that they think that's applicable. But we always try and have things that are based on research and facts, and we actually have someone on staff who does a lot of that information, does a lot of that research for us, so we can have good, solid information to share.
David, we spend a lot of time with both parties being upset with us, and
that's true.
and you know what? We're okay with that because our executive director says that if both parties are frustrated with us at certain times, then we're doing our job of getting our members' mm-hmm. opinions and feelings out there, and we don't placate with just one or the other, or placate to just one or the other. Even with our endorsements, they end up being about 50-50. So, and we have no problem. If we have to, I mean, we have singled people out if we need to do that. If there's an issue that our members need and they need more information on that, we'll be specific with instances where there are people maybe not listening or working with us.
What do you think things like the Pulse that you're doing say about what might be happening with traditional media, radio networks, TV, newspapers? I mean, you must have given this some thought because you're now sort of in the mix.
Yeah, and when we first started doing this, there were only a few of us on staff that, as with other things that we've tried to start in the past, there were a few of us that kind of got it and saw where we were trying to go. And so from that perspective, we tried to keep technology and what we used very low key and low end, meaning that when I started basically with a laptop and a $6 microphone that you can get that comes with your compact computer. And I know that there are lots of podcasters out there using that exact same setup, and it works for them. And they have an audience of thousands of people, and they're walking around with their laptop and their tiny little microphone. But the more that we started to do the show, and as our director of communications in the building, and then my boss, our deputy executive director, saw that there were people listening and we were getting comments and feedback about the show, then they realized that there's an audience for it. And then as they started to listen to the show, and both of them have even been on the show, which I think, you know, I did that on purpose. I mean, it was important to have them be a part of the show to get an idea of what we were doing. I think as they started to do that, then they saw how it works, that how accessible and how fast we can get information out to an audience if we need to. And so they're on board now. At first, I think they just humored me and let me go and kind of do this thing with minimal time and minimal equipment, but now they're on board with it.
Are there any plans for additional podcasts, other topics, other areas of interest?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we should do that.
Sounds like a yes.
We've talked a little bit about it. I think that for Gail and I right now, we try to make sure that we have content. You know, it's still one of those things that it's secondary to our primary positions and jobs. And so we don't always get the luxury of spending, you know, a day kind of brainstorming topics. So sometimes it's Thursday when we come up with the topic ideas for Friday. Sometimes it's Friday. as we go along and we get a handle on this and we're able to get a better understanding of what it is we can do, we've already started to think of other options and other ways that, you know, for instance, we would love to do something where we want voices of teachers, and we'd like to go out and do kind of what we've heard on public radio stations where you may spend half a day interviewing and working with the teacher and listening to what he or she does in the classroom. And that wouldn't necessarily fall into the same format as what we're doing now, but we would love to do something like that.
Are you doing any blogging at all for the association? Is anybody doing an NSTA blog?
We want our executive director to start doing something with blogging, and he wants to. And what we're trying to do right now is really get our website to the point where he could access it and he could work on setting up his blog and getting his thoughts down without anybody else. You know, he could do it at home, for instance. Mm-hmm. And we're still, you know, it's interesting. We kind of jumped over, when you talk about Web 2.0, we kind of jumped over blogging and went straight to podcasting. And part of that was because this is where my interest and passions lied, more so than the blogging side of things. But I think that there's a venue for it in our association. It's just a matter of figuring out how to make it easily accessible for those who have never done anything like that before, meaning our staff.
You know, you asked earlier, though,
you mentioned that there were... Oh, go ahead.
Well, you asked earlier about how we kind of see ourselves in the media realm. It really is amazing, especially with what I do on the political side. When I get on my computer in the morning and read the news from across the state, I now don't just check, you know, the major newspapers or even some of the kind of second-tier newspapers. There's about 4 or 5 blogs I read every day just to see what's going on there, what information they have. And a lot of times anymore that you get really good information. Now, sometimes you have to screen a lot of it, but you can get some really good information by reading some blog that some guy does in the afternoon and on his lunch break or mm-hmm. whatever. It's amazing how it's changed in such a short period of time.
Yeah, my homepage now isn't, it used to be MSNBC.com and now it's Dig.
So, ah, me too.
Yeah,
me
because too. Those are the stories I'm interested in, and I want to see what everybody else, they're pulling stories. There are people out there that are able to pull stories faster than I can pull stories, and find them, and they're finding stories I would never read about otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I heard something the other day also about, there's another group out there, and I don't remember, I think they're called either Associated Writers. I think that may be the name of the organization. Essentially what it is it's a group of individuals that are blogging and writing, and they're paid based on who picks up their stories. It's almost like Associated Press a little bit, but the difference is they're writing straight for websites and blogs, and they don't necessarily have their own blog even. Some may, but some are just writing as freelancers and hoping to make money based on what they're selling. And there, you know, people are still trying to figure out how to find that same kind of niche in podcasting, but it's still a new technology. I mean, the only way people are really making money with podcasting right now is if they're able to get advertisements on their podcasts.
It sounds like you're accomplishing the things that you want to accomplish for MSTA. I mean, it's not about making money for you guys.
No,
true.
Yeah. I mean, this is an avenue, an opportunity for us to get information out to people quickly, efficiently, to do interviews that we might be able to fit into a magazine. But when you have a 40-page magazine that comes out quarterly, or a 60-page magazine that comes out quarterly, you can only fit so much into that venue. And then your website is the other opportunity, and we try to put as many stories as we can on the website, but that doesn't always lend itself to an interview with somebody at DESE or an interview with one of our members. So,
what advice would you have for other people who are in similar roles that you guys have, for if they were getting ready to start one of these? What, from the last 6 months of your experience, what would you tell them?
The thing that's really worked well for us, I think, is that we try and keep our show short. We shoot for 10 to 15 minutes. A lot of times we'll shoot for 10 minutes and we'll hit about 13. And that works really well. It doesn't give you 30 minutes when you think, oh my gosh, what am I going to talk about? You have nice short chunks that are easier to fill, and it's easier for our members to find the time to listen to a show that's short. You know, they may be able to do it when they're walking the dog or whatever. And I think that really works well for us.
And what I said is that's probably one of my biggest criticisms for a lot of the podcasts out there is they figure, well, the time is free, so I can talk as long and as much as I want. The problem is, do people want to listen to you talk for 2 hours on a topic? And a lot of people just don't have the time. That's one reason why they turn to podcasts, is because they can listen on a bus ride, or they can listen to it while they're jogging, or they can listen to it in the morning when they're walking around the block. So keep it short and keep it relevant. And if you plan out what you're going to say, which is probably the other downfall, and it's one of our downfalls too. We don't always do as good a job as we could of planning out what we're going to say. But if you do plan out what you're going to say, then I think that you can limit yourself and keep yourself to a reasonable amount of time. And for us, that 10 to 15 minute window is a good time for our members. You know, most of our members have 10 minutes to eat lunch. And so if they want to listen to our show, that's 10 minutes that they have to do it while they're eating their lunch.
Well, I'm going to tell you, as somebody who's been in broadcasting for, you know, 30 years, when I started listening to The Pulse, I was sort of crestfallen, because I thought, my gosh, these guys are really good, and they just started. So I was very impressed, a little demoralized, but actually, no, it's wonderful. I mean, I think it demonstrates that, you know, it's more important that you have, you know, interesting people who have something that they feel very passionate about. And now the tools have gotten so affordable and easy to use that anybody can do a podcast.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. And so what's going to happen now, I think, if I'm going to speculate a little bit about the future, I think that you're going to see some that get picked up by larger media organizations. You're going to see some that continue to have a format that they try to incorporate some kind of advertising. Some, of course, will fall by the wayside. And then you'll always have those independent podcasts out there, because technology allows you to do that, and which I think is great. I mean, you have all those people that wanted to start their own pirate radio stations, and they really don't. I mean, it's better to put it into a format like this, where there's a little bit of organization, and if somebody decides they want to be as random as they want to be, they can, and everybody else can decide whether they want to listen to them be random as they want to be.
Let me ask a somewhat personal question. I'd be curious to, if you all don't mind sharing, what are some of the podcasts that you guys listen to just for your own entertainment and amusement?
Gail? Gail doesn't listen to a lot of podcasts, which is funny, Steve, because there's a lot. I mean,
Isn't that terrible?
I do another podcast on gaming.
I listen to Todd's podcast.
Yeah. I do another podcast on gaming, and the guy that I do that podcast with doesn't listen to any at all. I can tell you,
that's
interesting. Yeah, I know.
Isn't that terrible?
I listen to...
I don't think it's terrible.
I read a lot of blogs. Does that make up for my podcasting inadequacy?
I think all that says, Gail, is you have not found the podcast. Well, first of all, do you have a portable MP3 player? Or
no, that's the problem.
There it is.
Well, when's your birthday?
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
I keep waiting for Todd to buy me one, and so far he hasn't.
Yeah,
so
now it's time.
We are good.
Well, when you find that topic that you just are, you know, passionately interested in, you'll scoot out and get an iPod, and you'll start listening.
Well, and the sad thing is that Todd will a lot of times find something that he thinks I'll find interesting or humorous, and so I'll listen to it, and I think, well, this is great. And then I just never,
The Onion. I mean, for a while she was listening to The Onion every day. So they have a great podcast, and they did a good job of getting sponsors as well. But, of course, they're The Onion.
Yeah.
I listen to several gaming podcasts, and a couple of them are with large conglomerates of like IGN, which is owned by a larger subsidiary of media. I also listen to podcasts geared specifically towards entertainment and television shows. For instance, there were a couple Lost podcasts that focus on the television show Lost. And they do a great job of speculating. It's interesting to hear other people's opinions, and you never would get to hear something like that other than through something like a podcast. And my wife would listen to those with me. And then in terms of technology, the Twit, I listen to Twit every week, which is, to me, one of the best. Leo Laporte is probably been around as John C. Dvorak. Those two have been around in technology as long as anyone, and as much as a curmudgeon as John C. Dvorak can be, he's entertaining and a good foil for Leo Laporte. So I listen to that show on a regular basis.
So I have to tell you, if somebody told me, described the podcast that you guys do, The Pulse, my first thought would be, gee, that sounds a little dry.
Yeah.
But you guys have great chemistry. You both sound good. And you really pull it off very well. It's a terrific podcast, and I think you guys should be very proud of it.
Well, thank you very much.
We're glad and surprised that somebody outside of education's heard it, so we appreciate that.
Well, I've taken about as much as your time as I feel like I'm comfortable doing. Is there anything, as we wrap this up, that I failed to ask about that you'd like to mention?
No, I guess the only other thing we would say is if people haven't listened before and they're interested, I mean, there are some topics we're going to try to tackle, and Gail and I actually are going to try to. We have an experiment coming up in a couple of weeks, Steve, that we're going to attempt to do, and it deals with releasing our information on who we decide to endorse as candidates and where we release it. We're going to try to release that information somewhere other than straight to print media and see what happens. And try to direct people back to our podcast. But we're going to do it through the podcast before we do it through a traditional press release, just for fun.
You're the candidates that you're going to endorse on the podcast?
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about some of the endorsements that we made. We're going to talk about the process because we think that's important. And we don't think everybody understands that it's not staff, you know, that it's our members making those choices and decisions. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll probably mention some of the endorsements that we make through the podcast, and then we're going to try to see if we can get some of the blogs around Missouri to pick that up first before we go to traditional print media.
What an insanely wonderful way to spike your podcast
subscription. Thank you. We thought so too.
You saw right there.
Dang it! It's going to be a huge hit. I guarantee you that will get you more publicity, I'll bet, than anything else you've done previously in traditional media.
We hope.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It will be interesting to try. That process won't happen until probably closer to the end of September.
Yeah, the meeting is actually the 15th and 16th of September, so it'll be after that.
Yeah, after the 15th or 16th, we'll do a podcast maybe the next Friday, give ourselves a few days to get things together, and that one will probably be a little longer than normal.
I'll bet you're breaking ground here. I'll bet no other association in your space anywhere has done that before.
We know that there aren't any other associations doing podcasts. But I guarantee nobody's tried to do something like this in terms of getting the information out there. I mean, we know that traditional media will pick up the press release. Some of them will just print it straight. We also know that a lot of the candidates will send out their own releases. But we thought, you know, why not give ourselves an opportunity to spend a little more time than the typical 1 to 2 quotations we're able to get into a press release and really talk about some of these endorsements and why we did what we did. So Gail,
I'll be sure to pass that on to the guys at the Missouri Net. I think that's a great story.
Okay. Well, yeah, we appreciate that. And Gail she's a good sport on this one. So she was willing to go for it. And it didn't take a lot of convincing, but I think she's humoring me a little bit, but I appreciate it.